humans are really good at being inefficient. So in a world of automation, precision work, and robotic labor, what's a human to do? On this week's Techonomics, host Jason Middleton talks with two Silicon Valley thought leaders about how the world should prepare for a labor market meltdown and how to steer clear of a societal breakdown. Where should robots fit into our daily lives? That conversation starts now.
Hello, and thanks for listening in to Techonomics. This week, we are facing the future, economically, socially, technologically, with two tech evangelists. Now, I'd refer to them as futurists, but their entire point is the future is happening now, and much quicker than anyone really anticipated. In this segment, we move off of the impact of robots and into the impact of machine learning and its effect on efficiency. Think about it. Humans are vastly inefficient. Think about relationships, for example, or the scientific method. That, at its base, is a complex question and answer system that uses proof. And there's a lot of failure built into that process, a lot of invention, too. Here's part three of my interview with Kevin Kelly and Andreas Weigand. We're speaking with Andreas Weigand. He's author of Data for the People, How to Make Our Post-Privacy Economy Work for You. We also have Kevin Kelly in studio with us. He's author of The Inevitable, Understanding the 12 Technological Steps That Are Going to Change and Shape Our Future. Gentlemen, before I pivot off, because I'm cognizant of your time, it's valuable to me as well. I wonder if I missed anything you wanted to talk about on this before I ask you a couple of questions about AI.
No, but it is a good segue, because one of the things that we have quickly realized is that the amount of data that we're collecting is on a daily basis is increasing at some exponential rate. It's so vast that basically big data is a big headache without AI. The AI needs big data to perform, but actually big data isn't going to make any sense unless we can apply AI to it.
Mm-hmm. Partly it is that it is not the data, which is in itself what we want. It is the questions we want, to which we find data as the answer. So when I work with corporations, they typically come with a question saying, oh, Andreas, we have all this data. What do we do with it? And my response is, well, think about what the questions are. Mm-hmm. Because in this world of exponentially increasing data, that can no longer be the starting point. You need to think harder. What problem do you really try to solve? And what are the trade-offs in that problem? And where do you stand on these trade-offs? And once you have figured that out, the data will be there. That is how the game has changed.
I see. So this growing haystack of data, we don't even know what questions to ask right now without AI to find the needles. We don't know which needles to look for, right?
Right.
Or should we be looking for needles at all?
Yeah. Maybe
interesting.
Maybe they're straws. Maybe they're ties, you know, we don't know the good questions to ask. And that's sort of where we're going is that in this world, I think in the near future, if you want an answer, you'll ask a machine.
Interesting.
What humans are really good at for now, anyway, is asking questions.
And I think it's important to let people do what people are good at and machines do what machines are good at and to not confuse the two.
And what humans are good at is wasting time. We're really good at the stuff that's inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what I would say is that in general, jobs are really bundles of different tasks, and a lot of tasks can be measured in terms of productivity or efficiency. So if you have a task that's at all related to efficiency, that's a task that will go to the AIs mm-hmm. and the bots. What humans are really good at are things that are not very efficient, like science, like art, like innovation, like entrepreneurship. All those things are inherently inefficient uh-huh. because they require you to make mistakes and try things that don't work and to have failure. If a scientist tells you that they are very efficient, don't hire them because they're learning nothing. They're just repeating the same thing that works over and over again. So science inherently has to be trying things that don't work. That's inefficient. Art is inherently inefficient. And by the way, so are human relationships. They're terribly inefficient. And so those are all the things that we want to do and are good at, things that are inefficient. So in a certain sense, humans are really good with inefficiency. Anything that's efficient, any task that's measured by productivity will go to the bots.
Now, what is important is that we don't follow the wrong equations, because if we are evaluated by efficiency, we are not going to do well. So us as society thinking about what is it that matters for humanity and trying to put those things into the equations, that I think is a task which we are working on right now by formulating terms that are not just industrial output of the industrial military complex, but that include things like wasting time.
Right. The cadence of this conversation has taken us to automation and the application. You mentioned it there. That was my last question. The effect on automation, AI, deep learning, and inefficiency from humans, and how that impacts our labor market as it's arranged right now, right? So I think Kevin and I spoke last year a bit about the turn of agrarian into industrial, and now we're going from industrial to digital. Are we prepared? Or is that really why your books exist?
I think we are not prepared, because at the workplace, an incredible number of data is being collected, like the interactions you have with your coworkers, or if you are, say, a customer service agent, or I'm at the board of a company in Palo Alto, Percolata, that collects data about shops assistants, people who work in shops, because that is still a major part of the cost in retail.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do better scheduling, in order to find out who's working well with whom. Now, should your company require you to wear a fitness tracker 24/7 in order when you show up in the morning to say, I think last night you didn't get quite enough sleep. Maybe we'll make it easier for you today. You don't have to come to that meeting. Would that work if there was symmetry, if you would also see your boss's activity at night? So those are the questions which we are struggling. What is it that we want? In the past, we could measure efficiency, and that's what we optimize for. Now we need to figure out what do we want to optimize for, and then write down that equation and optimize for it.
Yeah, I think as we move away from the industrial models of the world, which were also very much about rearranging the physical world, the world of atoms, we're now into the era where we're rearranging the intangibles in our lives. The intangibles of, like, who do we want to be? What is this for? What's the value of this? What are humans good at? What's my relationship? What does it mean to be a male? What does it mean to be American? Whatever. All these intangible things about meaning and role and relationships, that is the center of the change in the culture. And it's no longer just like, well, we're going to rearrange the cities. I think in 100 years, some of the cities are going to look very much like they do now, because that was the result of the Industrial Revolution. We're into a period right now where we're going to be rearranging the intangibles, creating new intangibles. And it's a very, at times, seemingly abstract world, but it's going to come down to how people change their behavior. And the answer, and I mean, the question we sort of have is more of like, who do we want to be? Which is a very, very, very difficult question to answer.
It is. It's a monumental question, yes.
Yeah, and what world do we want to live in?
Yeah, also very hard to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things when I worked with Jeff Bezos at Amazon, he said was, it's important not just to focus on what changed. It's also important to see what doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the things that change, they might be changing. On the other hand, the things that don't change, they will be the constants in our world. And I think having the balance between those two, or having the trade-off between those two perspectives, and knowing where you want that knob to sit, is an important part of how we get to know ourselves.
Gentlemen, this has been a thrill to have you both in. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Much appreciated. Any final thoughts you want to throw?
I would emphasize again that I think maybe an undercurrent of our conversation is this idea of embracing these changes as a way to steer them. So one of the things that I think some people see this wave of data and the wave of changing, and they want to stop it. They want to resist it. They want to slow it down, turn it out. And I think that's the wrong metaphor. If you're in a rapidly moving river, then you want to actually be paddling at least as fast as the river is going in order to steer. So I think the only way we get to steer this is by embracing it and using it. And it's through use, dealing with this data, practicing data literacy, that we can actually steer this to where we want it to go. I think trying to stop it, let's track less, let's not allow this, does not work. What we want to have is, we want to say, yes, this is going to happen. Let's figure out a way to make it really work for us.
I'm on the same page as far as the slider goes and being open to this, but I have to add that I think some of the fear is regulation is always so far behind innovation. And so innovation is tip of the spear, kind of scary a little bit, right? But you're encouraging us to open our eyes a little bit wider, right?
Yes, and I think it's true that the regulation, legislation, and law always follows. And that's actually good in my perspective, because what it means is it's going to kind of codify what the consensus is. But first, we want to come to a consensus. And I think the way that we can actually kind of regulate sort of in the beginning is through technology. Technology and code is actually a kind of law. And so we can actually bring in some regulation before we have a consensus for the law by using new tools and doing things that can shape and nudge us and steer us. So there are ways to steer this pre-legislation. And I think once we try different things and we can decide to have a consensus about what is working, then we can say, okay, then we'll put it into a law.
I see. Mr. Wygant, last word?
I think the right to experiment, to right to play with our data, to change the setting of the knobs and to see whether we like it or not is an important way how we interact with the world and how we create a future we want to live in.
Thank you both for sharing your work and expertise this morning. Thank you so much.
It's a real delight being here. Thank you for your great questions. You're obviously a human.
I'm so inefficient.
Thank you.
That was part 3 of 3 with a discussion about the digital age and digital economy with Kevin Kelly and Andreas Wygant. Kevin Kelly's latest book is titled The Inevitable: Understanding the 12 Technological Forces That Will Shape Our Future. He's also an editor-at-large and co-founder of Wired magazine. Andreas Wygant's book is titled Data for the People: How to Make Our Post-Privacy Economy Work for You. He is also the former chief science officer at Amazon, and he teaches at Berkeley. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics.